This is the second episode of the series Futures, in which we interview key players in the design scene working in the public sector in Europe. We have planned this series with Anni Leppänen as part of her larger research for understanding the current change in the government and the design sector. We wanted to envision collaboratively how this could be in 2030. This series has interviews describing cases from Denmark, Sweden, Estonia, and the UK. Let's go now to the interview we have today. Netta Korhonen is our colleague from the Network of Designers Working in the Government. We did this interview face-to-face as we three live in Helsinki. We wanted to invite Netta for this series as she has done work related to thinking about the future from Vinnova in Sweden. Vinnova is the Swedish innovation agency, and there she was especially in strategic design. Nowadays, she works as an independent expert in co-design and systemic design. My name is Mariana Salgado. This is Diseño y Diáspora.
So my name is Netta Korhonen. I'm a designer, or maybe like a systemic designer, service designer. I've been working with design for government 10 years, 12 years now, mainly in the Nordic countries, in Finland and Sweden. I started more with the traditional service design role, co-designer role in Sweden, and I've been more and more kind of getting closer first to policy design, then to more systemic design, strategic design, and been mainly focusing on kind of societal issues, systemic issues, climate change, other planet issues with planetary boundaries, and then societal issues like adult education or refugee systems. And well, now I'm based in Finland at the moment, working with the state-owned sustainable development company. In the later years, I've been also moving towards futures design and kind of participatory futures, participatory foresight.
And what did you study?
I studied first industrial design, and then moved towards service design and designing for sustainability. So I have a master's in Aalto from a collaborative and industrial design program from 2015.
Yeah, and we actually studied together with Netta
at Aalto
University. Yeah,
I thought that you both got to know in the network of public designers working, networks of designers working for the public sector.
Yeah, well, yeah, maybe that's why we have stayed in contact, but we know each other from the first design for government.
And you were also working in Sweden, right?
Yeah, I spent 7 years in Sweden working with the Swedish public sector, the Swedish Public Employment Office, and then the Swedish Agency for Innovation, like funding innovation, Vinnova.
Okay, so you are going to tell us more about that. So, could you give us an example of your work that relates to designing for future? Because this is the topic we want to talk today.
Well, of course, I kind of always kind of liked futures thinking, or read some scenarios. It was important. But kind of the mind-blowing moment was a couple of years ago working for the Swedish innovation agency, Vinnova. And we started to think, how could we work on a kind of future of democracy? Who gets to design the future? How could we engage different people talking about the future? And I was kind of co-creator and project lead for a call for financing that people or organizations, designers, architects, artists could apply for funding for creating speculative futures. We called it future prototypes. And the target was to get companies, maybe maybe a train company, maybe a hospital, to apply together with the innovation team or with outside designers or artists to create kind of a speculative future that didn't exist yet, didn't have to exist, but help us to engage in more constructive conversations about the future.
And who gets to design the future? You were asking that question. And normally it's like elite people that gets to into this type of conversation. So how do you open the...
Exactly. How do you open who gets to design? That was our way of having a public call for people interested in designing the future, presenting it, and then engaging, inviting people to... see these prototypes, experience these prototypes, and the thought was to not have them in a museum or like behind
vitrines.
In an institution, but out in the streets, out in a train, in a hospital, in a real environment. So kind of the future comes to visit for one day was one of the thoughts that we worked on.
Tell us about one of these prototypes, for example.
Well, the most amazing, all of the financed prototypes were amazing, but we actually did get the innovation team from a hospital to apply for funding. Then they made a stellar prototype. It was in the hospital lobby. It was a discussion of preventive healthcare. So a patient or visitor could come in, visit this oracle. Do you want to know about your future of your health? And they have kind of a station where you could place your phone, so it would analyze your social media or your phone behavior, digital footprint, and swallow a pill that would measure your gut biome, and then give a swap of your DNA. Leave all this to the table. None of this worked, of course, but it was an experience that you could go through. After that, you could hear from an AI kind of prediction, what kind of risks are you in risk for loneliness or depression or heart disease or something. And you would hear this through headphones and then get a small receipt, and you could pick up a prescription in the end. Like maybe you would need more nature time, or you could resist sugar, urge to eat sugary things, or get like a friendship pill or something like that. So it was a really immersive way to talk about preventive healthcare. And then they had good selection of questions like, do we want this future? Do you want to know your health or health risks? Or if you would know, would that actually influence our behavior? Do we get more paralyzed or like, okay, well, there's nothing much to do about it? Or would we become proactive to prevent them? Would you want to give out your data? It was all these questions related to preventive healthcare experienced through by politicians, by patients, by healthcare staff.
And what do you do with the results of all that?
It was, in this case, I was only facilitator or co-creator of the call. So it was totally up to the teams to facilitate these discussions. This was mainly then for the hospital. But from Vinnova, from the innovation agency's perspective, we wanted to know, does this engage people in more constructive discussions? How do we see the future? Take it a step further. And that did happen. What I know also that the hospital innovation team became from like a small team in the periphery to be now invited once a month to the board of the hospital to tell about the new news. So it became like a good tool to engage people, find out what's new in design in the hospital settings in preventive healthcare.
Yeah, so I was thinking, so you made the future concrete with these like futures artifacts, and people could really experience the future through those spaces and those artifacts. Like, what were the responses of people that visited these places?
It was very variating. Some of the topics were difficult. I mean, there was a future of intimacy. There was a future of a town in Sweden, like them when the city is designing for master plan. What is the future of Uppsala going to be like? Future of food. Future work, so very different type of topics. I have a couple of quotes that I remember. One was, I heard what happened actually in LA, they it was this one amazing prototype that the medium was street signs, like the future of street signs. How does climate change affect our street signs? So there was like a center for climate anxiety, or like in this street there will be the water trucks coming to give out the emergency water when it's needed. So this kind of prototype. So I heard that in one workshop in LA, the participant said that it kind of changed my thinking. I'm gonna go out now and create this world that I saw in the street sign. She was an architect and kind of had lost her purpose. So she became kind of interested in working towards the future.
So it kind of created like agency for people maybe to, so the future became so concrete that they feel that maybe they have agency to change it or influence it or be part of it. So that's quite exciting.
At least crystallized in this one quote. Then there were, of course, a lot of just speculation. Should we do this? Should we not do this? But maybe I hope, or I think the biggest influence of this kind of work is to start thinking about the future differently. That's not decided yet. We often focus on the kind of what is handed through to us through science fiction or news, or this is going to happen. But if you start looking at the trends differently, or small signals, or just questioning, do I want this future, or how should this affect my life? So if you just start thinking about the future a bit differently, practice the literacy of the future, kind of.
Yeah, but I also love the example because it's a concrete example in which the sign artifact is proposing a new way of researching the future and researching the future in public spaces together with the people that just happen to be there, right? Like hospital patients, families, whoever that is around, and not in a closed setting when you make a call for research. Then the ones that are applying are the ones that can read and know and have the time, etc. It's not the same as doing these experiments in public spaces.
Yeah, I definitely think that was one of the key factors why the call was so successful. And it was a very clear goal of us to not have the futures only put in a museum, but have it out there where the people are. We had a lot of discussions about that. Maybe you should handle that with care as well. What do you put out on the streets, and make sure that everyone can participate? Not only have it in the city center or in a specific area, but the future prototype that we had in a town called Uppsala in Sweden, it was a kind of a house on wheels, so they could travel to different neighborhoods and meet people in different neighborhoods, not only kind of inside the city hall, maybe a shopping center.
Yeah, and I was wondering, like, why did government want to do something like this? What motivates governments to be interested in the future and engaged in this kind of creative way of looking at the future?
I don't know if I dare to say that there's more like hype, or at least there's more understanding that our time is such that everything's changing quite rapidly. So we should be more agile, or more keen on understanding that things might change quickly. Governments still have very kind of stable roles, or quite long processes, but understanding future in different ways can at least help to be a bit more proactive in thinking what should our role be. And maybe we need to even skip some steps, start already developing kind of the future systems, since we're not as, I'm talking as I am the government, but maybe we can't change quarterly, we can maybe even change in a year, but if we think about the more long term, and if we start a project now, it's going to be ready in 5 years, 10 years, it's going to have effect longer period. So we have to all the time live in this longer term, kind of in a bit longer time perspectives.
And as you were saying in the beginning, that it was related to the future of democracy, or how democracy is evolving. So that's also interesting, that perhaps the future is somehow part of democracy because when people have agency to think about the future or imagine different futures, maybe that should be part of the definition of new democracy in some way, that they can be part of that.
Oh, I really like what you're saying, definitely. There is not going to be just one future. It's all of our separate little futures, and we can experience them in different ways. I like how my my colleague from he's now working in OECD in Paris, but he was talking that we should think about future, like have future literacy, have it a little bit like brushing our teeth, like a routine every day to think about how the world is changing, how my world is changing, how should I live. I don't know, what should I invest in, these kind of things. So it's about our own agency, but obviously about the democracy as well. What kind of future do we want to be building? And who's we who gets to design? For us, it was important to engage different groups of people discussing about these things. But what about the rest of the biosphere, the Earth? What kind of vote does Mother Nature have there, or different species or nature? So engaging those voices also in the debate or in discussion, not the debate, more healthy, constructive discussion about the future. So everyone should have a role.
I wanted to ask you that we know that the future doesn't happen or just happened, but our actions matter and we can influence the future. So what does future agency mean to you personally? Or do you feel that you can influence the future?
Yes, in my own, of course, my own future, I can, or my loved ones or my inner circle, think about what kind of life do I want to live? How is my life within planetary boundaries, for example? But then also through my work, I kind of have the systemic change or societal change for good, for better, as my compass. So through my actions, I can also influence small parts of the world, small parts of the future, and want to work kind of impactfully. But through this kind of participatory foresight, if I can help that more people, more organizations feel the agency that they can start creating a better future or for themselves, for others, have that kind of philosophy.
Yeah, I was wondering, like, in these times of crisis, global crisis and uncertain times, there is a talk about a crisis of imagination. So maybe we as designers are somehow there to help others to also imagine or reimagine things and imagine different futures. So maybe our role can be special in that sense as well.
Yeah, but also in legitimizing this use of imagination within the public sector, right? Or within these big organizations that can influence.
Mm. Yeah, it's definitely like a difficult word, imagination, to be using in the government setting. Not so usual.
Yes.
And creativity. So, and that was a very creative project that you did at Vinnova. So, so it feels like the government is like ready to experiment and adopt on these creative methods.
Yes, definitely. It's so strange that we have, it's very humane skill to imagine, to create. And somehow that's been forgotten in our basic work settings often. So definitely there's much more room for it, but it's already there, just like creating more space, holding space for it.
Yeah. So you have been working in the government for a long time. So what are the biggest changes you are now seeing or experiencing?
Of course, this is from my subjective perspective.
Of course, and we always talk about from our subjective perspective.
And in the Nordic countries specifically. So if I think about how the discussion around design has changed, it was very much hands-on service design when I started. It still is. Maybe I've just moved more towards, I have a passion to change the big picture, big things, big systems, and many others that have been working in the government for a long time kind of see the underlying problems and want to get to the higher level, not higher, deeper level, maybe to influence the system. So I would say that it's maturing in all levels, from service design or in service, in more praxis or policy setting, more in also strategic or systemic setting. And I like to think about development not as a, obviously not as a linear, not really iterative either, but more like a panarchy, or like a nature does it. Like there's a growth phase, there's some kind of new status quo that we're aiming for. And then we have learned things, it's never really perfect. So there's some kind of release, something changes, some new things come in. And then there's a kind of new reorganization phase. Now we are hiring these kind of designers, or we want these skills. So I don't know, where are we in that kind of circle? But there's many phases that we have gone through, from first just having a lot of hands-on design to organized design teams, at least in digital service development, then more towards having a few crazy ones in the ministries or trying different things.
You're like talking Mariana. About me.
and many people dreaming about getting to those positions, and then having that become a bit more mature. And as we're learning about the kind of government structures as well. So I don't know, we're somewhere there in, I'm in a new growth phase, I would say. We have matured a lot, and now we still haven't maybe reached the next status quo that is a bit more systemic on the fuzzy level.
Because when all of us three started working for the public sector or bringing design to government, it was maybe a bit less than 10 years ago, and all of us were those like pioneers and the first designers in government. So things have changed a lot since then. Like, I don't know if you have noticed some of the biggest changes, like you were mentioning, like the bringing digital design for sure, but also like
designing public policies, right? Like not only in the implementation, but in the creation of public policies. That was, at least when I started to work in the ministry, it was quite new.
Yeah. Then behavioral, kind of meeting behavioral science, working through that part. Futures thinking for sure is coming. There's a lot of designers educating themselves now in futures thinking that are kind of inclined in working with government. Maybe those are new trends.
And why do you think this future thinking and future design has a specific importance in current times?
Well, like I was saying, that the kind of the fast-paced change, and that if we want to kind of stay ahead the curve, we need to be understand the longer perspectives of time of things. It's also a way to maybe work with the kind of participatory methods are important, but and when we've been kind of like criticized that they're not used enough in kind of city planning or designing new policies, and when you talk about designing for policy or a new part of a city, you can't create prototypes the same way as you can use a test or engage in that way. So I think futures thinking or futures design is bringing a very useful tool to public engagement on the bigger issues, if we want to have everyone giving input in how the new education system or education policy should look like. So I think there's also a big role in as a kind of a part of the toolbox.
And perhaps like when we started as designers in government, we were kind of bringing on the basic concepts of like the customer or the human or what is a service, and designing in a participatory way or developing services in a participatory way. But I think now we're kind of realizing that is a foundation, but it's not enough. That we as designers need to be kind of digging deeper, like you were saying, that we need to be kind of using our powers and using design to somehow focus on the more complex systemic issues, that we can't just be focused on this maybe like capitalist idea of just like improving services and having the customer voice in the public services, we need to actually harness the power of design to focus on the more pressing and complex societal issues. So I think that is one of the biggest changes we've seen, that it's in the golden years, the early years when design was so successful and so wanted everywhere, I think we're now kind of seeing that it's time for the next level, next step in this process. So we need to have more impact for our work.
Yeah, I think what happens also in Finland, which is in my opinion quite particular, is that we have a lot of designers that came to design after they have completed another career in the humanities, for example. And these people, they have another understanding of the whole public sector because they might be experts in public administration, for example. And then they have done a master in business administration with a focus in design. So a lot of the good word that is spreading in Finland, it's because also we have all these people coming from other disciplines. So this has opened the door in design because of this transdisciplinary thing that is coming out of how are the designers, how is the background of our designers, that we are kind of, at least Leta and me are kind of exceptions because we have done everything in design, but you are an example of that, you have any study.
Social sciences, yeah, that was my first degree. And so I feel I've been forever working in the government setting, but then I found design during the World Design Capital Year in 2012, and I found my home. So I think you're right, Mariana, that this multidisciplinarity or transdisciplinarity is definitely something that is a huge benefit for designers working in the government context, but also maybe letting go of a bit of design in the sense that we are seeing this democratization of design. So many of my colleagues in the government, they are now trained to some extent with design methodology or design thinking, and it's not so new to them anymore. So we need to be able to share design with others within the government setting, like other civil servants. So I think that's also an important change, that we are not the kind of only ones, but we are sharing this with others. For example, in the context of City of Helsinki, we have a very strong participation units that are working very closely with the design methods. We have communications units that are using design in their daily work and spatial planning and all this. It's very design oriented these days. So a lot of that has changed in this past 10 years.
Yeah, and this definitely creates a lot of synergy within the organization when you have very different units working within the same framework.
Yeah, but it also poses a question for designers and design teams in government. If design is so popularized and democratized that our colleagues are using it, then what is the kind of purpose of these individual designers or design teams? Like, what should we be kind of focusing on? Is it supporting these other teams and other parts of the government? Or is there maybe something else kind of reserved for us?
First of all, I want to say that it's exactly like you've both been saying, that it's kind of creating the foundation that we have a new designer clan that has other backgrounds. And I'm so sad to like see many of them like, I'm not really a real designer.
Yeah. You are the we most are all amazing. The time telling them, yes, you are.
And some of my best designer colleagues have social sciences background or been working as a civil servant for a long time, so we have a deeper understanding of the reality of government, of public sector, have also other tools in the toolbox that I don't have. Obviously, you can then become better and better at design. I would say that design is kind of the science of how we develop things, so you can become better at it. You can better visualization things help, or if we're getting better at methods or getting better at interviewing, but you're totally a designer. and it's needed. But it also, like you said, Anni, poses a question of how do we then keep up the development of new skills. So it requires something from the team, some kind of sharing within the organization, how to not stagnate, how to not start thinking that it was old news with the design course a few years ago, but keep constantly developing, evolving, being interested, how to make that happen. I think many organizations are struggling with that.
This interview is part of the lists Salud y Diseño, Finlandia y Diseño, Suecia y Diseño, Futures, Finnish Design in the Government, Diseño y Gobierno, Suecia y Diseño, Futuros y Diseño. As this podcast is mainly in Spanish, we have many lists in this language. The lists are a way to classify the content so it is easy to find within the 500 episodes the ones that you are really interested in. If you don't find something, you can always contact me and we'll let you know if we have an interview on that topic. The list can be found in Spotify, YouTube, and in the recommended section of our website. Neta told us about this project in which they have new ways to approach people, such as going to a hospital. For thinking and creating new futures, they really experiment with new methods in new environments. Sometimes it is not about the method, but the atmosphere and the context. Thinking about the future in a hospital setting is new for researchers and public servants. Unleashing our creative thinking can happen in many ways, but one of them is to change the environment in which we think. Sometimes just a small change makes a difference, but you have to get the idea to do this small change. Which is the small change that your project needs to do so something new happens? Now, there is more and more research done saying that just moving, not really dancing or doing CrossFit, but just walking, awakes creativity. I will continue doing podcasts because I know that while you listen to us, you are in movement. Very seldom our listeners are in front of the computer while listening to podcasts. Asking ourselves these questions, such as which is the small change that your project needs to do so something new happens, might be more efficient if you do it while walking. Let's continue listening to Netta, as she has a lot more to tell us.
Yeah, and that's maybe one of the reasons why the Finnish designers in government community started this futures process that led to this interview as well. And the community has been holding a lot of discussions about the changes that we are witnessing around the government. And we developed this kind of card deck to cover some issues that we perhaps are discussing or witnessing. And some of them are quite provocative, maybe, in order to kind of increase discussion around some of the challenges or some of the themes that we're seeing. Changing. So we gave you a task before this interview to look through the card deck and maybe choose a few themes that are maybe something that most provoke you or most interesting to you. So I'm really eager to hear, like, which themes did you choose, and let's maybe discuss a little bit about what the themes mean to you personally. What have you, like, concrete examples of things you might have seen or your opinions, like, going towards the 2030s, how are things changing perhaps around this team? So
yes, it was a fun card deck. I didn't choose the card. Now I remember the first one was about is the double diamond dying. And to be honest, I never was a full believer in the double diamond, but of course it's not dying. It's the kind of just concretizing our way of working to look at the wider picture and then after that make decisions. So it's going to stay. But the cards that I actually chose was the topic that we were just talking about. Kind of, there's a card saying like consultant designers design and civil servant designers advised by design. Oh, not at all. It's design should democratize. It's a way of developing. Everyone can get better at it. Like I said, the best designer colleagues I have other backgrounds than just art school. Art school helps. I have like visualization is one of my main tools, but I would be lost without my civil servant designers.
Hmm. Yeah, we're seeing that during this past 10 years, when design has entered government, we also see a lot of consultants entering the government or consultant designers. So that card was maybe about this kind of phenomena that, for example, in the city of Helsinki, we have a very sort of consultant-based design model that we have 12 companies, design agencies that are working with us in design projects. So maybe that is something interesting, whether that's going to be like continuing. So one of the reasons why it is so consultant heavy, the design in government, I think, is because of the financial model that in government, when you are developing services, you're often you need investment money, and you can only use investment money to buy consultants and not hire in-house designers, for example. So this has led to this situation that we do have a lot of in-house designers now in government, but we also have hundreds of consultant designers working inside the government. So it's going to be interesting to see whether this is going to keep on going like this in the 2030s or if it's going to change. I think we definitely do need design agencies and consultants to kind of bring new ideas to government. So the external perspective is very interesting. But we're also kind of seeing that, especially in the designer community, who are all civil servants, we are seeing that there's a lot of weight on our shoulders as well, because we are the in-house designers, so we need to kind of be also leading that within the organization, leading the change after the consultants leave. And what you were saying about the double diamond, I remember when my first like gigs at the government, it was really like project-based, three model, like pure double diamond processes. And that was like the basic model. And I still see a lot of us doing that kind of, we're stuck in that sort of project cycle of repeating the design process and then moving on. So I don't know if you've noticed any, or what did that card actually mean to you? Like, why did you choose it? Could you elaborate a little bit?
Sorry, I want to comment about what you say. Okay. You say many things on the row without stopping. And sorry, one of the things that you say is that the way the government is organized brings this situation in which we have a lot of consultants doing design and not so much in-house designers. And I just wanted to quickly comment that Mariana Mazzucato and Rosie Collington, they have a book about this, The Big Con, and they are kind of demonstrating how consulting industry, so these consultants, weakens our businesses, infantilizes our governments, and wraps our economies. So this is not only something that happens in the design field, but also in other areas of consultancy that work for the government. Only that. Yes, we can come up to the diamond.
That would have also been an interesting topic to continue about the,
You can continue.
Should things be outsourced? Do they have to be outsourced to consultants? Yes, we probably will, when things need to change fast or we're creating a clear new product, maybe it's good to have consultants. But I think it's also very much connected to what can we do, what are we allowed to do with the government money, what kind of funding cycles. So when those, we need to look at those first if we want to kind of create it optimally as well. But then the, yeah, why did I choose Double Diamond? For me, Double Diamond is, it's like the philosophy. Every design process then is, should be a bit more flexible, and it needs, we can't just do a project like you did in art school and then hope that it the PDF will live on. You need to do other background work behind the scenes. So there's never really, there never was a really pure only Double Diamond. Everything happens inside the diamonds project. So it's always a lot of other stuff around it. And you can, I just use the same approach if I defined, tried to define goals for future government innovation programs. So look at a lot of data, look at different sources, have interviews, and then try to understand what are the big topics. So just the same kind of thinking that you open up, you close down, you test options, you close down, just the way of thinking, way of working. It's very central in design. So in that sense, that philosophy should live on. But maybe just carrying out the standard design processes only works in a bit more just service development, not the only all the fuzzy policies, systems, strategies. Maybe there we need to have a bit more elaborate diamonds.
Yeah, I was just thinking, like, since you, we gave you a task of choosing maybe two or three teams. So was there a theme or card that you really feel like you want to discuss? Maybe that one.
I chose another card, which was like, it's saying designers do not have career paths in government. And
I love this one. It's super provocative.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And I'm both like against and with this one. Maybe first for me, there definitely is a career path. It depends how you define your career path. I don't need to change or chase titles so much. I guess maybe now I'm titling myself some kind of senior or specialist or something. But the biggest drive for me is to create the change or see the change happening. Want to work with more complex, more interesting processes. So that's the career for me. But I definitely have felt that when working longer time in one public agency, then it's totally up to the agency maybe to define their career paths. And some have adapted more like senior roles or lead roles or something like that. There's no one way to, there's not so clear titles within kind of the design field on what do they actually mean, and each agency, each company, organization chooses themselves. But for a young designer, you can feel like, am I stuck in this? Am I just a designer or service designer or for a long time? And but that's totally, it's a lot about your own feelings. How do you feel like you want to be progressing? But I would really maybe want to challenge also to think about your career in different ways than just focusing on the titles.
Mm. And I was thinking that maybe since most of us perhaps are working with managers who are not coming from the design background, so maybe...
And colleagues.
Yes. And colleagues, but but from the kind of career path perspective, maybe since we don't have like designers as managers necessarily, so it might be difficult for our managers to also kind of plan for that career path. And another point, I was thinking that perhaps since design is such a new profession in the government, that compared to some of the more traditional careers or professions in government, like communications or even ICT architecture or this kind of professions, there are maybe clearer career paths for those professionals. So I'm definitely interested to see whether in the coming years, also to retain talent, because I'm now seeing a lot of amazing designers leave government to go to other jobs. So maybe they are frustrated that there are no career paths. So how do we retain this talent? How do we make sure that people keep motivated to working inside the government. Maybe it's not, like you said, about getting a raise and big title all the time, but maybe, at least for me personally, I feel like I want to constantly be learning and challenging myself.
The same.
Yeah, and when, Marianna, you were saying maybe that when a while back when we started in the government, we had this like really wide mandate of change and transformation, and it was like there were no like specific limits in the sense, but these days like people or the government agencies, they are recruiting for very specific narrow roles also. Yeah. So that is kind of creating a different career path for those designers who are joining in these recent years compared to us kind of entering and being like the transformers.
Yeah, exactly. And how do you get the transformer role? It's a lot about your own drive. Well, you need to kind of play the game in the, I don't know, salary negotiation or yearly, what is it called?
Development discussions.
You're not going to get it handed to you, but you need to kind of demand that I want to grow towards this direction. And it is a lot about your manager, how you get it. But I've also had this transformative weird role and I've been able to gain that kind of trust, but it's not self-evident and it can be very tiring. And I think also that one big reason to leave is that you don't feel like you're learning. Maybe you build up something and then the organization changes and that collapses, or like how do you these kind of things,
recreate, like, yourself.
Yes. How do you keep recreating yourself and stay naively optimistically practical?
Well, one thing that happens, at least in the State Home Council, is that it does not, there is not such a role as designer. So there is not a title that is possible to get which could have the design word in it. So you can be a specialist or a super specialist, right? But there is not something that can really be assigned to you a role with a name that then others can't legitimate and then hire someone else. So all this trust, it's super personal at the end. So it's like they believe like, yes, Netta is great for this and she's doing great work, but they don't think that other designer might come afterwards and do the same. They think that it is because of Netta or Mariana or Annie and not because that we have a study for that and that we have something different to contribute to.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's also about like establishing those permanent roles for designers, because we are still seeing a lot of temporary positions and kind of convincing or innovation labs. We need to be convincing more kind of a long-term place for design maybe. But I was thinking about the presentation by Martin Tordon and Kara Kane about the long slog of design in the public sector. I don't know if you listened to that.
No.
It was part of the Creative Bureaucracy Festival in Berlin last autumn. And that was really inspiring to kind of think about how long the transformation process is, that sometimes Kara and Martin were kind of saying that sometimes it's okay to take a break, you know, maybe leave the government for a bit to do something else and get reattached with your creative self. Or perhaps you go and spend a year in another agency. So kind of leave your own organization and go do something within the government, or leave completely and then you can come back.
Yes.
So that was quite radical to say, but having been all of us, we have been working in the government context for so many years that maybe they're right. Maybe sometimes we also need to kind of hand over the baton to the next one and then come back maybe when things have changed a bit.
Well, at least when this current government leaves. In my case, when I am inhabiting that break. And I also think it has to be with a political decision. It has to be with the fact that I needed personally a break, but also because the current immigration politics have changed a lot from one administration to the other. And then it's not the same to work for. I mean, I don't consider myself a public servant that could do whatever the current administration has in mind.
Yes, I totally respect that. That's also an interesting discussion about the work health, work-life balance for everyone, but for creatives as well. In Sweden, actually, it was possible to, within many organizations, many public agencies, to swap or like to try another one for a year. There's a system for that. I tried to take advantage of that, but it didn't work. But my point was to leave for 1 year from the employment office to work in another agency, and then life happened and so. But they have talked about it or thought about that it's good to maybe live in different parts of government, but also in other get different type of input exchange.
Yeah. Well, here within the government is also possible to do this kind of swaps.
And with regards to your mention, Marianne, about the political side of our job, I was thinking that when I started working in the government as a designer, I was kind of maybe naive thinking that, well, as a civil servant, you kind of try to be neutral, but... I tried to be neutral, or I thought I would be somehow kind of insulated from the politics, but it's not even possible. And I think that has been like important learning to also kind of understand how the politics is influencing design work in the government. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that leads me to thinking about one aspect we didn't discuss with regards to features is the values and the narratives that are kind of, or the meta-narratives that are kind of the basis of many of the futures that we are creating, that designers have this really important responsibility to bring those values for discussion and kind of make the meta-narratives, the assumptions, the biases to be visible so that we are not designing for futures that are based on some values that are kind of exclusive or some assumptions that are perhaps breaking. So one of the futures processes I'm doing currently for the city of Helsinki, it's around employment and the whole concept of having a job or not having a job and employment, that is changing. So, and there's a huge stigma to being unemployed. So that is a very difficult conversation that we need to have in this futures process. Definitely. How is the definition of employment changing, and how are the values attached to those futures we are imagining? Like, how are they discussed in the process? So how have you noticed, Netta, in your work, that these like values and meta-narratives and assumptions, they keep coming up and they're very difficult to kind of discuss?
Of course, and that's also a lot of responsibility to look at your own biases as well and your own assumptions and whatever you created, think that how can it be interpreted, or is this open? Am I opening this up for discussion, or which ones are kind of locked or within the future processes as well? What am I handing out there? I'm influencing thoughts or very important things to discuss. There was an interesting futures design case done with the Swedish employment office. I think the project was called the Ministry of Meaning. So maybe you want to look into that. So
I'm going to check that out.
Changing the work into meaning, what's actually creating meaning in our lives. Maybe we forget the word.
So you really create like a fictional ministry?
I wasn't working on that. Again, there was, I think it was Doberman, maybe, or the Sally part of Doberman working with them, with public employment services or public employment office. I just remember the tagline that it was Ministry of Meaning.
That's a super cool name.
But definitely shaking. Maybe that's why kind of participatory or design futures can help to, I don't know, pinpoint or like lift things that are maybe not for this and up for discussion otherwise.
Great. So what are you inspired now on? What do you recommend to reach, watch, or listen on these topics?
Yes. Futures within futures design, my kind of house god or guru is J. Paul Neely. So everything that J. Paul Neely has put out on the, out there, I recommend to listen. I like his way of talking about kind of the futures process, that it's much less about imagining those perfect preferable futures, but it's the kind of interesting that happens with like this, the future might be going there, what, how does it affect us? Or it's not, it's about I don't know, dancing with the future kind of in different ways. So I like how he articulates futures thinking or design futures processes. To read, I recommend the for anyone who hasn't read it, the Kim Stanley Robinson Ministry for the Future. It's a big book. You can find it somewhere on some audio services, and it's also done really well for audiobook. So totally put that on your spring or summer reading list. Another thing is that I have, it's maybe a weird one, but I got into reading poems. When working in Sweden, we had these learning retreats organized by Förnyelse Labbet. It's like a regeneration lab, this collective that I'm part of. And once a month we had like a creative writing coach and a poet who helped us working with our reflection and learning processes. And reading poems or writing poems, it can be like interesting medium to just structure your scattered thoughts or getting inspiration. There's so many things between the lines or something. So
what is this Regeneration Lab?
It's a company now. It stemmed from the Swedish Design Foundation. They worked there as a project for many years, for 7 years, and now have become their own company and own collective. So we are some strange individuals working as a designer with design, a lot of with embodied methods, bodily or creative artsy methods, poems, art, nature, materials, but very, very amazing processes. So I've been part of this collective, working with them.
For the Swedish government?
Yeah, a lot of with the Swedish government, a lot with the, they work a lot with different municipalities. It's been a foundation money before, now it's a bit different operating model. So Förnyelse Labbet, Regeneration Lab, I guess in English, but we are 20-something people working either together with some projects or separately. And I could also invite some of you there.
Yes, we would like to be invited. Thank you a lot for the interview.
In the previous interview, Christian Basson said something like, the future and the transition will be collaborative. I like that Netta's bet is also collaborative. She's someone putting effort in the networks, collectives, or groups of people with whom to collaborate. She participates actively in our network of designers in the government here in Finland, and also she has another collective in Sweden, the Renewal Lab. She was also very generous with us and invited to join that collective. Thanks a lot, Netta. Recently, I have received the award of the Alumni of the Year in Aalto University, the university where I studied. They interview me and they ask, what impact do you wish to have with your work? My answer was that the real impact will not come from my work, but through the work we do collaboratively, such as the work we do in networks and communities. I hope this award and also this series gives more visibility to the work of designers in the public sector. The legitimization of design work in relation to policy creation will increase in the coming years, and with it, we want to see more designers in government ministries. In other parts of the world, designers are involved in policy creation, not only in the implementation of digital services. I am an optimist. I think bringing design to policy creation will lead to less hierarchical processes with an increased level of inclusivity to the ones that have been marginalized in our society. I believe design could bring social imagination as the solution to complex problems in the public sector. Aneta's work is an example of this. As always, the music of this podcast is by Antonio Zimmerman. Sound design is by Julian Pereira. This podcast is published with Creative Commons license with attributions. This was Diseño y Diáspora. You can follow us on our social media channels in YouTube, Instagram, or Twitter, X, or visit our website. This podcast has been recorded in Helsinki Open Waves and a studio in Kaisa Cultural Center, part of Helsinki City. Kaisa is a cultural center that promotes the development of Helsinki into a diverse city by means of the arts and culture. Remember to recommend us and recommend our books. Stay tuned for more. We've got lots in store. Till next time, goodbye and the science and more.